Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today I think you're going to find my guest a fascinating one. This is a 27-year-old young man who has done a great deal with his life, and if you feel like you're going through some tough times right now, I think you ought to cozy on down and just get those ears perked up for a good listen, because this young man's story, Jason Dearlin, return from a comatose mind, is absolutely inspiring, but more than that, it has twists and turns in it that I think you'll find really interesting. Jason, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Doll.
Jason, I was sent your material a few months back. I found out about you through some information that was sent to me, and having been myself involved with the area of the study of the mind and intuitive abilities and all kinds of variables for so many years, your story really was fascinating to me on multiple levels. One, because of the courage that you have as an individual to be able to share your story. Two, how you were able to express so clearly what your experiences were. And three, that you have a very profound message to give in this wonderful book that you wrote, Return from a Comatose Mind. Now, you're, what, 27, 28 years old?
I was when the book was published. However, that was 3 years ago, and I'm 30 now.
All right, so you're 30. Now,
yes, sir. I'm 21. You sound 35. You have 35. Yeah, like that.
Okay, something. Jason, something is interfering with your telephone.
I have no idea what it is. I've never had this problem before. I have no idea what it was.
I don't either. Okay, because I was hearing somebody else's voice talking. So anyway, let's just move along, but I did want to let you know that was happening. In your dedication on your book, you said, dedicated to all those who are less fortunate than I am. The will to live is driven by inner strength. Hope is what helps fuel inner strength. Inner strength is possible because of physical prowess. Physical prowess fosters hope. Prowess is enhanced by exercise and physical fitness. Physical fitness emboldens us against challenges. Challenges must be overcome. What happened on that fateful day of June 21st, 1995, that totally changed your life?
Sure. I was with some of my school friends. I was, you know, on a summer afternoon. I was a big swimmer at the time, and was very grateful to get an afternoon of swim practice off so I could hang out with my school friends for an afternoon. And we were coming back from one of our friends' lake house, and as we were leaving, a thunderstorm just came out of nowhere, and it was a real bad thunderstorm with lightning and hail and heavy winds and rain, and we're in a very rural part of the state. We came to a yield sign where traffic, you got about three different directions of traffic merging into one another. And so either my friend didn't see the yield sign or misjudged the speed incorrectly of the truck, or didn't take into account of the powered hydroplane. And that forced, he pulled out in front of an 18-wheeler going about 70 miles an hour. And that was what did it. he came back out on my left leg and broke my femur, and I went out the side window.
And you then, with this horrific accident that occurred, you, like you said, were thrown through the window, and you then went through a coma that lasted for 7 weeks, and you also went through a number of very painful operations, as well as quite a process of rehabilitation. And here you are today, being able to live a successful life. You graduated from college. You got a major in political science and a minor in business. And you actually went on to finish high school because you were a champion swimmer before this accident occurred. And so your physical fitness enabled you on many levels to survive this horrific accident. If you hadn't been in as good a shape as you were at that time, you probably would have had even more difficulties with this condition.
Yes, there's no question. I would not have lived through that accident if I had not been in such good shape as I was. And that's a very good, big message I'm trying to get out to young people to, stay off drugs. Do something that really benefits your body, picking up a sport. And also, even though I was swimming, up to 24 hours a week, I still managed to stay on the honor roll. And, your brain is a muscle too. And, just like your heart and lungs, when it's used a lot and used correctly when you're young, when you're developing, it really benefits you when you need to really call on it to survive.
Now, because of this accident, with the impact of your being thrown through a window, you suffered severe brain damage, and I have known people that have been in horrific automobile accidents that I really could have an empathy for what you went through because I knew what they went through. And your brain smashed in this accident into both sides of your skulls, and you said you paralleled it with Muhammad Ali's being bashed in boxing. His head being hit side to side to side and the brain just being thrown around inside the skull. And that impact, you said, is what sent you into a coma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is true. Well, thankfully, I didn't have a lot of times when you have people that have brain injuries look at the swelling of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I thankfully did not have that. I was, because if you have that, then doctors have to, pretty much crack your skull to relieve some of the pressure. When that happens, and I have met lots of people that have had that happen to them, it's a whole lot tougher. But thankfully I did not have that, and that was just a grace of God. And that's, another message I try to get out to people is that, when you're faced with a difficult circumstance, you need to do your best, to help yourself. And also ask for the Lord's help, because there wasn't any way I could have done what I did by myself. I definitely had a lot of prayers answered. But at the same time, I couldn't rely on just that. I knew I had a lot of work to do, and I did it. I just started from the ground up, and I went to therapy and gave it all in therapy, and got everything back?
Well, what I found so fascinating is that when you went into this coma, the mm-hmm. body responded like it was going into a form of hibernation. And you knew innately that for you to come out of this, you were going to have to restore your body before you were going to be able to give back your speaking and other things which you have done. But during the course of this 7-week coma, you had dreams. And
yes.
This, you were aware of a lot of the things that were going on around you. But tell us about these dreams, because these dreams really stayed with you. And there was one in particular that was quite significant. But tell us what went on during those 7 weeks.
Well, basically, I had three intense dreams, and they were like long nightmares. They all involved water through the swimming. They all involved death, and they were all frightening. And the way I really, looking back on it, the way I justify it or try to explain it, in my book at least, is saying it was my my body was asleep, but my mind was not. My mind, you know, the dreams were kind of my body's way of communicating with my mind. But it was in a lot of pain, and the mind expressed it or portrayed that pain through the coma dream, being that was the only way for that to occur. What I'm trying to do in the book is really rationalize an irrational situation, and I think that really once people kind of hear about it and understand it more, they can better figure it out or better make sense of it also for them if they have friends or family members going through the same thing, or if they have themselves have been going through the same thing. It will allow you to better communicate and better support that friend or that family member or even yourself, and knowing what they're going through exactly, what's going through their mind and body, and why, what does it all mean, and how you can support them, you know, the best ways. I received tremendous support from my family, my school friends, my swim team friends, my church, people from my church. So I was very fortunate in that regard.
Now, you said at one time during your coma, you actually woke up during that 7 weeks, and you were aware that you felt you had to do something, and you went towards a spot in your right hand. There was an irritating feeling, your nerves mm-hmm. in the skin. And you said there was a large cloth mitten covering the hand, and there was just this incredible urge on your part. You called it the will to live, that your eyes opened all of a sudden, and no one was there to see this. Your eyes mm-hmm. opened all of a sudden, and you figured out, you said, I have to do something to get this mitten off of my hand, and you actually were able to do it with your teeth.
Yeah.
And yeah. I wonder, what was it like for a nurse that came into the room and found you in a coma?
Mm-hmm.
No one was there. I wonder what she would have thought, finding that a mitten had been removed from your hand. You had actually awakened out of that coma, and then you went back into it.
I think that's a good point. What had happened, you know, and I mean, I don't know exactly what she would have thought about, because I was, you know, I was tied down pretty well. It was pretty hard for me to move. But I had, you know, tracheotomy throughout the coma, and I would actually, I don't remember this, but it's according to my parents, take the tracheotomy out of my throat, and supposedly, I've always been a little picky sleeper. I don't like things bothering me when I'm sleeping, and I think that was kind of like I woke up and I knew something was there that shouldn't be, and it needed to be removed. But the actual waking up from the coma was a long process. It was a process of coming in and out of the coma. And when I actually woke up from the coma, you know, I could not see. It was a while before I could see again. So I really didn't know when I was awake or when I was in a coma or it was one of those things I just had to kind of do my best to keep my cool and know that I was alive, and that was the only thing that I knew.
Now, one of the dreams that you had, you talked about a white light in the dream, and you said that this was significant for you. It was the very last dream you had, but you did not stay with that light. It was as if you withdrew from it. You've had so many different experiences, Jason, with this particular happening in your life. You found yourself, after you awakened out of the coma totally, one, you could not speak. You just told us you could not see it because part of the brain had been damaged.
Mm-hmm.
And you really were irritated with a lot of the stuff that people would do with you. You said when you officially came out of your coma, it was your dad who had apparently asked you to show three fingers. And
mm-hmm.
according to your father, you tapped three fingers on his forehead as if you were just plain tired of being asked to respond to that particular request. So it's interesting, your brain was working, you were processing, and you had a logical side of the brain that was trying to communicate, and yet you don't remember doing that at all, but your dad does.
Right, right. That was the official, the doctor said to my parents that I was not out of the coma officially until I responded to a command.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the command, show me three fingers. And even when I was still in the coma, I went through phases. There was an active phase and a not active phase. And during my active phase of the coma, I would actually hit balloons by the therapist that were hitting them to me. Now, I don't remember any of this, but that's what I was told, and it makes sense a person, being in a coma goes through different stages or different phases while he's in that state.
You really had a very strong attitude about wanting to get well, wanting to get your speaking back, because when your brain was starting to work in a normal fashion, then you were frustrated because you couldn't communicate well. You had
mm-hmm.
to teach your body, your muscles in your hands to work. You had to really put something into action, and your physical discipline with your swimming prior to this accident really was a very positive thing for you, because you were starting to apply those principles in regaining your wellness back. Now, something that occurred with you, and this was a fascinating piece of information to me, they found you had broken your elbow. They really didn't have a big awareness of it for a while. But I was amazed that if someone breaks an elbow, that the body will try to create a calcium deposit to compensate for that break. And you were at an age where really the bones were still continuing to develop.
Mm.
And they were going to have to remove the calcium through surgery, but you actually developed an extra elbow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that just blew me away. I didn't know someone could develop an extra elbow.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Extra, you know, calcium buildup is common in all the ball and socket joints. So you have the elbow, and it's also common in the knee and in the hip also. That when you have a bad break, the body can make calcium or premature bone, and if not treated quickly, it will solidify and harden. And of course, I had an extra elbow because I had, you know, it had 7 weeks to harden and mature. But that can also be attributed to the brain injury I suffered also. It's kind of like a way for the body to protect itself. But it is pretty interesting. That was without a doubt the most painful part of my rehabilitation was trying to break that extra elbow. We did that twice a day in therapy, and then my parents would do it for me before I went to sleep. But it really made me thankful for when it was finally broken. So.
You credited your dad with a lot of the support that you needed. You wanted to go home, and he said, you can't come home until you can walk. And you got very, very angry. And emotionally, you would just get very, very upset with him. But your dad was a veteran from Vietnam.
Vietnam, yes, sir.
Yes, and he said, you need to know that I want you home, but you must follow through with your therapy. So in many ways, though it was an irritant to you, it was a spurring on. Your father really did you a favor. And you really had an effect on some other people, too. You had a roommate, Richard, who was a World War II veteran. The two of you had some really, really special conversations because he was going through some very difficult times himself. You learned a lot from this man, didn't you?
Yes, I did. And, that goes back to, I failed to mention him when I mentioned the support that I got. I was very fortunate to have him as a roommate. And, the stories he would tell me just made me just thankful I was there. In the, it made me thankful that I was in the situation I was in. And that goes back to, I'm sure I mentioned fellow patients in the rehab hospital I went to that, had missing limbs, couldn't walk, and even people I met that were in the community, Georgie. You remember the mm-hmm. boy that was but about my age when I when he had a car accident too, and he was in the coma for a while, and he never woke up from his coma. So really made me thankful. So that was the biggest thing I came away with from everything.
There are so many personal heartwarming stories. You describe your experience. You talk about the people that you were involved with rehabilitation. You are so clear about all of this, and I think it is so wonderful that you've written this story, because it brings home a lot of points, and that is, One, to be grateful for your life and count your blessings. Two, things can happen in a split second that in a million years you would never think would occur, that can transform your life, which is exactly what happened with you. And that when you are dealt something that is ugly, unpleasant, that you can fight it. You don't have to be, quote-unquote, the victim. And it doesn't mean it's going to be fun. Doesn't mean you're going to have days where you're just going to be tiptoeing through the tulips all the time. But you really give a message very strongly, Jason, in your book, that you need to help yourself. You need to be there working as part of the team, whatever that team may be, so that you can do what you need to do. You have to develop that inner strength. That's how you describe it in the book.
Yeah. You really do. And it's very important to do that. And always remember that whatever situation you're in, you know, other people may consider it an absolute blessing. Basically, there's always someone in a worse situation than you have. So that's always very important to remember.
You said you felt when you wrote this book that readers would be keen to learn more about the will to live sense and the coma dreams that you went through. You called them nightmares, but some of them were not really severe nightmares. And you have a website, and your website is Jason Dierling, and that's Jason Dierling. And you really love to learn, and you feel that people need to have that attitude, too. They need to be open to learning new things. Jason, I think you've done a fabulous job. Is there a message you would like to leave with my audience before we close out our chat today?
Just always be thankful for what you have, and always know that when tough times come, you need to remember that there's other people that are in worse situations, and so that's how I got through it. And when you really understand that and believe in it, there's nothing really that no obstacle you can't overcome.
I want to share the last part of your book, Jason, that you have. You say, The moment has arrived for us to shake ourselves free of our complacency and put self-pity where it belongs, out of sight. That is the only way to move forward. Guided by optimism and hope. Jason, I think you've done a wonderful job with your book. You give us an insight into what people who are in comas go through. And this is from your perspective. Regrettably, just as it was with you, people cannot speak. Often their muscles don't respond if they've been in a horrific accident, just like yours didn't. You had to teach them to work again. But you've given us an insight into the fact that people that do have comas, if they're in comas, they can hear, they can feel. There are those levels of awareness that are in place. And though there are the Georgies that may not make it out of the comas, there's always an opportunity, just like it was with you, for someone to make it out of a coma. And we need to remember that just because they're not responding as we expect them to, there's still more going on. And Jason, I think you've done us a great service by writing about your personal experience. His book, Return from a Comatose Mind. If you'd like to check out more information about Jason, go to Jason Dierling. That's JasonDierling.com, and you'll find out more information there. Jason, thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you, Donna. It was a lot of fun, and God bless.
Same to you, Jason, and have a fabulous holiday season.
Okay. Everybody do the same. Take
thank
care.
You. Bye-bye, Jason. Bye. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be taking a break. When we come back, I'm going to share a story with you about a woman that I knew personally and what she went through in her coma. And we've got traditions for Christmas and all kinds of good things. So join us. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Hi, it's Donna. Telephone lines are open, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me, I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here is the telephone number, 888-815-9756. The number again is 888-815-9756. And if you're a first-time caller, just know all I need is your first name or initial. I want to know where you're calling in from, and then just sit back and relax and let me tell you what I perceive. And after that, you're welcome to ask me a question of any interest that you might have. So again, 888-815-9756. Now, I told you I was going to share with you a story about someone that I knew that was in a coma. We had a very good friend. Her name was Carolyn, and I'll call her friend Peggy because at the moment her name is escaping me. Peggy lived up in Canada. This was a woman who was, at the time, I believe, in her late 40s. She was involved in a very, very serious car accident and was put in the hospital. She was in a coma. The situation was very, very critical. Her life hung in the balance for a number of days. The doctors, after so many days, I don't remember how long it was, it could have been a couple of weeks, they were saying to the family, look, she has all of this trauma. We really don't think you should keep her on a life support system. And you're going to have to make a decision. Well, our friend Carolyn was called by the family because it reached a point. It went on for more than 2 weeks. Actually, it was going on a month or so. And the doctors were really becoming insistent that it wasn't fair to her, to the patient, Peggy, or to the family, because the costs were, one, just exorbitant, going through the roof, and Peggy had been in a coma. There had been absolutely no response whatsoever. So the family was really in a quandary, and Peggy and Carolyn had been friends for a number of years, and Carolyn said, okay, I'm going to take a flight. Now, I know we've got a caller, but let me just finish this sentence, and then I'll tell the rest of the story after the caller. She flew up to Canada. She went into the hospital room, and I'll tell you what happened after she went into that hospital room, so you'll know the rest of the story. Let's take our first caller for today. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Janine. I'm calling from North Carolina.
It's Janine?
Janine, D-E-N-E-E-N.
D-E-N-E-E-N. Okay, Janine, I know we've got a little bit of a time delay with our phone connections here. And where are you calling in from again?
North Carolina.
North Carolina. Where in North Carolina? That's such a gorgeous state.
Fayetteville.
Fayetteville. Ah, yes. Used to have family that lived in Fayetteville. Very nice community. Mm-hmm. Okay. Janine, let's get down to business here. The first thing I'm looking at with you is, it is appropriate for you to challenge the paradigms or the thinking of people. But I want you to be aware that before you challenge, you need to think through how you want to present your challenge. The reason I'm saying this is you don't need to make people mad or make them into enemies. What you want to do is present your challenge in such a way so that the people who are locked in their thinking will go, oh, I hadn't considered that option. And that's what you need to do. You need to be able to present your concepts and ideas, because I'm seeing some kind of a conference here, some kind of a environment that you know that some changes have to be made. And there is a feeling like, well, maybe if I took a verbal sledgehammer, it would affect them. No, that's not going to do it, because everybody's going to hovel down into their own sense of complacency. So what I want you to become aware of is to think before you speak. Present ideas and concepts in a format and say, would you consider something like this? And if they say, no, wouldn't consider it, ask, why not? What is happening is that for some reason, you are needing to refine your levels of skill in communication with others. Not by going to war, but by stimulating questions, by stimulating a positioning of examination of new concepts and new ideas. If you try to battle the old way, you're going to lose. You're going to have just total failure, and you're going to just get mad. You're going to say, I don't want to have anything to do with these people, blah, 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 blah. You are learning how to communicate more effectively and efficiently. I actually think that you can be an extremely powerful speaker and that you can be an activist relative to interests that you have. And you do like to think outside the box. To be able to reach the thinking processes of other people so that they're not intimidated is your challenge. So that is something that you are in the process of learning how to do, and I want you to be patient with yourself because you are a doer, and you have felt like your life is sort of stagnant, but the stagnation needs to be there so that you have the impetus to move forward. If everything was cozy and comfortable, you probably wouldn't do much to change it. You're not unlike most of us human beings. When we're cozy and when we're comfortable, it's like, oh, mañana. No. This is a time of change in your life. This is a time in your life. This is going to go on for 2 years. You are in a transformational cycle. You are in a cycle that's going to enable you to shift your lifestyle towards the direction you want. You are going to be in a better economic situation 2 years from now, but you're going to have to work for all of it. That's nothing new. That's been the story of your life. you're going to come out ahead. But you need to think before you speak. Ask yourself, if you were in a mindset that that other person was in, what would be the best way to approach? What words would be most effective? This is how you're going to become recognized for being a very skilled communicator. But you need to start paying attention now. It makes a difference. The money's going to be okay, hon. What question would you like to ask me?
Oh, God, you just answered everything. I'm in the process of starting a life coaching school.
Oh, there we go. All right.
Wait a minute. Oh, let's not laugh yet. It's very metaphysical because I deal mostly with the universal and the spiritual voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which a lot of, you know, some people just don't agree with them all. And I guess I was calling because I wanted to know how that was going to work out because my first class I tentatively have it scheduled to begin the week of January 25th.
Fabulous. Now,
I just wanted to know, you know, like if I was going to have students by that time.
I want you to be aware of something. Don't worry about how many students you have. If you only have one student, you give that person 101% of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You must learn how to communicate. You need to understand that as a life coach, if this is what your passion is, part of your journey is taking care of your own garbage as well as assisting others. Now, that may sound a little corny, but it's true. When you're a teacher, you will find that your students will teach you as much, if not more, than what you think you're going to be able to teach them. That's just what comes with the turf. And as a teacher, you never, ever know it all.
I know. However, I'm actually by trade.
Okay, but you're doing all right. You're doing all right. You have to begin somewhere. I would like to encourage you to do one practical thing. Do your studying, have a good support group with other life coaches that might be in your area. Find yourself a mentor, but also join Toastmasters. This is an organization that I think provides so much good service. And you get to know some wonderful, wonderful people. It's a safe environment to learn how to speak effectively and how to use your words in a wonderful way. It will improve your teaching skills tremendously.
Okay.
All right. You're going to do okay, but this is the beginning of a very fine journey.
Thank you so much, Donna.
You're more than welcome. You have a fabulous holiday season, and thanks for calling in today. Tell your friends about the show.
Oh, will do. Thank you so much. Good
you
night.
Are more than welcome. Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo. Now, by the way, I told you I would finish the story. Now, if you want to call in and chat with me today, 888-815-9756 is the telephone number. All right, Carolyn went up to see her very dear friend, Patty, who had been in intensive care and in a coma for a long time. And I believe it had been over a month. Now, the family knew Carolyn quite well, and Carolyn saw Peggy. She goes in, sees all of the wires and the tubes and everything in the life support system attached to her friend. She asked the family if she could be left alone with Peggy. They said sure. So the family went out, but they were really stressed because Peggy was dearly loved. They didn't want to pull the life support system. Carolyn looked at the whole situation, and being the woman that she was, as soon as the door was closed, she took Peggy's hand into hers, sat down on the side of the bed, and she talked to Peggy. She said, "Peggy, you need to make a choice. This is the situation." She explained to her in detail what was happening in the hospital, the life support system that she was attached to, what was going on, and that economically it was just doing horrible things to the family, and that she had to make a choice. She said, "Peggy, everybody loves you. if you want to go and you want to leave this experience of life, it's okay. I want you to know you're dearly, dearly loved. But if you want to stay here, then you need to come out of the coma. I'm telling you the truth. This is a conversation she had with her friend in that hospital room. Carolyn gave Peggy a kiss on the forehead, pat her on the hand, left the room. Within 24 hours, I kid you not, 24 hours, that woman responded and was coming out of the coma. She not only came out of the coma, the doctors had told the family, they took her off the life support system because she was able to breathe on her own, do things on her own. So within 24 hours, she was off the life support system. The family was thrilled. She was told she would never walk again. She would never do anything. Within 1 year, that woman was driving an automobile, totally functional. And she remembered hearing Carolyn's words. So don't ever think that talking to someone in a coma doesn't make a difference. It does. This is Donna. We're going to take a break for just a moment, then we'll be right back. Give me a buzz if you want to chat, 888-815-9756.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. To Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Let me share, oh, by the way, if you want to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. The holidays, oh, they're so much fun, but I think what makes the holidays even more magical is to know about what different cultures do during the holiday season. You have so many different traditions that people talk about. Now, in Mexico and in France, there is a tradition, and I know it's in some other cultures as well. I can't recall them right off the tip of my mental tongue, but they have a habit of baking cakes, and they'll put a coin in it, or they'll put maybe a little doll, or like in France, they'll put in a particular kind of a bean. And whoever gets that bean, depending on the culture, they're going to be the king or queen for that day of celebration, or it's considered good luck. You know, there's all kinds of wonderful things like this that go on. Well, I thought I'd share with you some of the traditions that are in different cultures around the world. If you're in Russia, you have the Eastern Orthodox Church, and there is a porridge that is served on Christmas Eve as part of the dinner. It's called kutya, and it symbolizes unity. And what it is about, it's a tradition, and it's like you're sharing common blessings. And then in Italy, one of the big things, of course, this is with every Italian household. My goodness, I know all about that because of my background. But there's always cooking together during the holidays. My goodness, it's really a production. And often in Italian families, you have the matriarch, grandma, whoever she might be, or great-grandma, whoever's still around, and everybody brings in something, and they're all in the kitchen, and it's a commotion like you wouldn't believe. There's all of this delightful conversation going on, and of course, the smells are just awesome. And the kitchen, isn't it true with all of us, whenever you're having a gathering in your home, there's always all of the people are in the kitchen. It's amazing. We've got a member of our family that had a custom-made home, and the home is just gorgeous. And they don't cook a lot. The spouse cooks a lot. But the gal said, well, you know, my husband's got all of the bells and whistles in this kitchen, but it's a little kitchen. She said, here we designed a home for entertaining, and we have all this open space. And she said, guess where everybody is? In this little itsy bitsy kitchen. She said, next time, if I'm going to build a house, I'm going to make sure I have a huge kitchen and a smaller dining room, et cetera, area, because she said people just love being in the kitchen. And that is so true. I know it's always that way in my home. Now, how about Denmark? Well, they love singing carols, but they also dance and sing around the Christmas tree. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful holiday tradition. But there is just something about music during the holidays that is absolutely magical. We attended a function not too long ago where there were Christmas carolers and harmonies they were doing, and they were in costume. And oh, it's just so much fun. Now, in Germany, you know, they all have, like I said, there's all kinds of traditions. Children in Germany write letters explaining why they deserve presents, and then they tape them to their window or leave them on a windowsill for Christkind. Now, this is an angel who helps determine who's going to get gifts. They even decorate their letters to make them stand out. And there's so much that comes from German tradition. I mean, so many of our holidays that we have come from Germany. Our traditions of the Christmas tree, our traditions of ornaments. I mean, this is just something that Germany has such a rich history in our cultural legacy in the Western world. And the people in Finland, they have a fascinating tradition among their farmers. They tie decorative bundles of oats, wheat, and other grains to poles or trees on Christmas morning. Now, this was started as a tradition hundreds of years ago, and on farms in Finland, families will not eat until the birds have been fed first. And that's just a nice little tradition, don't you think? And I know here in the Pacific Northwest, our weather, we've had some real extremes, but we have so many beautiful, beautiful birds up here. And sometimes the weather gets really, really cold. So if you put suet or you have, you know, wonderful concoctions that you can hang in the tree, that really does help the creatures when the weather gets especially difficult to be able to survive. In Norway, well, in the tradition among many Norwegians is that one child will sit under a tree, picks out a gift to pass to someone, and then waits until that one's been opened and enjoyed to pick out and pass another. So everybody takes turns. And then in Sweden, they have what they call their glögg. It's a potent mulled wine flavored with sugar and spices and served piping hot. Oh, that is so wonderful on a real cold eve, sitting in front of a fireplace. It's not just for skiers either. I think anybody can enjoy that. So those are just a few items of trivia regarding other cultures and some of the traditions that they have with their holidays. Well, I've got Christmas stories tomorrow that I'll be sharing, but also we're going to be talking about cooking with love. Ooh, yes, 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 yes. That always makes things taste better. And, of course, this is the season when food is extra special because we bring out our recipes and do all kinds of wonderful things that, well, maybe during the rest of the year we wouldn't consider, you know, those special chocolate fudge recipes. Ooh, maybe that's what I should share with you. I've got a $500 fudge recipe. There's a fun story behind that. But anyway, it's always been a winner at my house, so I'll share it with you. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Your life, your mind, your spirit belongs to you. But you have a responsibility, and that responsibility is to shine it up, polish it till it sparkles, and then let it be what it is to its finest and best, so that other people can have a way of knowing that they can have that same result too. So turn on your sparkle. You're needed. 'Tis the season to be jolly. This is Donna. We'll be talking with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.